and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm Eddie Packham, and we are in your ears with the brilliant assistance of OldFootballShirts.com. Well, the headline news this week has been, well, there has only been one bit of news this week. First time since 1982, we've got an England international in the shape of Lewis Dunk. Al, we've got an England international.
Nearly. He's nearly there. Let's rewind this time last year when we were talking, yes, Lewis Dunk, he's made a brilliant start to the Premier League. He's made the step up. It's superb. Is he going to make the England squad? Is he going to make the World Cup? Or is he left it a bit too late? And we kind of said on this show, maybe, but probably not. There's too much traffic ahead of him. And let's see what happens in the World Cup. Now, I kind of said, I reckon that England will crash and burn horribly and Southgate's got to start again with his England squad after the World Cup. Not quite happened. We had a very successful World Cup. But the other thing that's happened is that an injury's come in. Tarkowski, his name?
Yeah.
At Burnley. He's got crocked and Lewis Dunk is next in line. And let's face it, it's because it's been a topic of conversation over the past year, we all know it's fully deserved. Mm. This has not come from the blue.
Well, depending on who you talk to or listen to, it's been a long time coming. And I'm one that thinks it has been. I mean, we're not exactly over-endowed with left-footed ball-playing defenders, which is exactly what Lewis is. And him, alongside possibly someone like John Stones, it's a match made in heaven for England, I would say.
There's any combinations. I think the point is that when we've seen Lewis Dunk play alongside another defender, whether he's going to be... He's not... His best pingers are with his right foot. Yes, he can use his left foot and he is good at it. But he mostly plays on the left side of the two. But we've also seen him play in a three, which is what Gareth Southgate's preference is. And so we know full well that if he is going to be slotting into a back three for England, big if, I think he'll do so quite comfortably. Yes, he's a good ball player. The days of him, and this is... This is something that we've talked about so long, is let's rewind 2 or 3 years. Yes, we knew he was a decent player, but he always had a yellow card within him. You know, the red mist would descend and he'd go straight through a defender. And let's face it, he has really come on leaps and bounds.
Yeah,
probably
and
just in the last 2 or 3 years.
And you've got to accredit that to Chris Hughton, really. In fact, you've got to give Hughton a lot of credit for what he's done with an awful lot of the players.
Absolutely, but I think you've got to give Lewis Dunk an awful lot of credit for actually listening and doing it as well.
But obviously, I mean, he's going into the squad for two games, two Nations League games, away against...
We're not talking about rubbish either.
Against Croatia and then away at Spain. Now, obviously, the Croatia game, if he gets in there, you don't want to make your debut in that game.
I think if you're going to have a baptism of fire, let's do that one.
It's not exactly a baptism of fire, it's a baptism of empty stadium, as it's got to be played behind closed doors.
Well, in that case, if he makes a mistake, it's not as though the rest of the stadium's going to laugh at him. So,
just the sponsors and people who've sneaked in.
Yeah, and a few champagne drinking prawn sandwich likes or whatever the equivalent in the Dalmatian coast is. The headline, as you said at the top of the show, this is the first England potential international at Brighton since 1982. It shows that you have to be in the top division, ideally, for a player to be playing for England. I mean, there's been a few exceptions down the years. Steve Ball springs to mind. But he's had to prove himself on the top stage. He hasn't slouched. He was my player of the season last year. He was the player's player of the season. This is clearly a fellow with talent, and he's got ability and knowledge and know-how. And in the absence of the oldest man in rock and roll, he is the club captain. He's the team captain. You know, this is a fella at 26 who's matured into the player he needs to be.
And the irony is, he hasn't hit the heights he did last season yet. He's actually been below par by his standards.
I think that's a point actually I had thought of. You think, well, actually, you could argue who was better last year. Yeah, he got his injury, came back arguably one game too soon. We all felt that Balogun was better. It's not as though he was horrific. It's just that by his high standards, he didn't have the games that we thought he could do. But he seems to be on the case. Southgate, I think, is evidently happy with his progression. And so I think has rightfully earned his place. And it's very exciting for him and for his friends and family and the club as a whole. And we are so proud of him.
But they could have given him a tracksuit that matches everyone else's.
Yeah, that picture. Him and three dwarves. That was... That was,
there is a gag there somewhere, but
there
we'll,
is there,
we'll,
yeah.
We'll leave that one.
It was. It felt like, I don't know, Goofy alongside Louis, Huey and Dewey.
But you've got to give Gareth Southgate a lot of credit. I mean, it's not just Lewis Dunk that's in this squad. You've got the likes of Jadon Sancho, who's ripping it up for Dortmund at the moment, and Maddison, who was playing in the Championship last year for Norwich, who's taken to the Premier League like a duck to water. I mean, he's given these young players an opportunity. And I mean, and you've also got Ross Barkley coming in as well, which is him going to Chelsea seemed to be a little bit of a weird move at the time, but under the right management, he could be that midfielder we've been looking for.
Well, with the new broom that seemed to have swept through the FA a little bit about 2 or 3 years ago, with the appointment of Gareth Southgate coming through the ranks, let's face it, he was an under 21, he was considered a safe bet, he was an FA blazer, he was the man. And everyone had said, look, let's write off 2018, the World Cup, and let's look forward to 22 and 26. So let's start now. The fact we got to the semi-final with a bunch of kids is actually a major testament to it. Therefore, we have that platform going forward. No one was expecting us to get to the semi-final. I don't think in the heart of hearts the FA were. However, you know, this is a platform, and if the likes of the youngsters are going to come through, then you've got an idea as to who is going to be in 22 and 26 in the World Cup squad right now.
Okay, well, we'll leave that one there, and we wish Lewis all the best of luck, and hope that he actually gets a cap in one of these two games. Now, Al's going to take you on a trip down memory lane as he caught up with Don Shanks earlier this week.
Let's go back exactly 37 years to the summer of 1981. Mike Bailey was in charge, and we signed a QPR fullback, Don Shanks, and I'm delighted to say that Don joins me now. Don, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Alan. Yes, very well.
What are you up to these days?
Oh, these days, well, you know, I'm officially an OAP now, so I'm not doing too much. A little bit of travelling around and watching a few games and sort of keeping my eye in, and that's about it really at the moment.
Sure. Let's quickly go through your career before you got here. Obviously, you're noted for being mostly at QPR. You spent the sort of like the biggest time of your career at QPR, but you actually started at Fulham, didn't you?
Yeah, I started at Fulham, and going back in them days, some of you, the listeners, might remember a certain Johnny Haynes.
It was before my time, I'm afraid, but yeah.
He was the first £100-a-week footballer, would you believe?
And that was in the days before, you know, Jimmy Hill got the maximum wage abolished, wasn't it? So I suppose he would have been the sort of like the Ronaldo or Messi of his day, wouldn't he?
He probably would have been, yeah. He was the best player at Fulham. He's a great player, and, you know, at that time, Fulham was sort of in the Premier League as is now, and you know, they had sort of George Cohen, who was playing, who was the England fullback in the World Cup and stuff, you know, so they had a lot of good players, so that's where I started, yeah.
So when you started, I mean, obviously knowing the fellow was there, I mean, was it a case of, you know, almost like God was walking into the room when, you know, when the first team came by and your apprentices were like, oh no, Mr. Haynes is about, was it kind of like that, was there this sort of big deference
to
him?
Yeah, he used to sort of like, you know, have memories of him doing the Brill Cream ad on the TV, you know. Like they do now, all the big Liverpool players doing it. Johnny Haynes was the first one doing it with the Brill Cream. But yeah, so it was a little bit intimidating, but he was a real nice guy, and he was real easy to be around. You know, he weren't some sort of flashy type guy. He went out, played his football, best player. And like, you know, he always had the time of the day for the young lads, and yeah, he was great.
And I mean, did he actually sort of like personally encourage you, or was it, you know?
Yeah, no, he did. I actually used to clean his boots. I was the boot boy, and I used to clean Johnny's boots. I demanded double money, really, because I had to clean the left and the right boot.
So when you went to Fulham as an apprentice, was it with a view to becoming a fullback, or what did you start off being, do you feel?
Well, it's sort of in the beginning, I was sort of a centre forward, and then I ended up like, you know, not really making it there, and sort of then it was just drafting back, and I ended up being more or less a full-back midfield player, and I went there sort of with an open view. It was only on a sort of 2-3 month contract to the end of the season, see how things went, and thankfully things went well, and they signed me on, and I was there for 5-6 years. I got in the England youth team. We won the Mini World Cup in Czechoslovakia with Trevor Francis and everybody. So it was really a big upturn in my life, yeah.
Fabulous, fabulous. But so you got your first 5-6 years at Fulham, and then you went on to Luton. I mean, how did that come about? What was occurring then?
Well, sort of Fulham, we had a few different managers at that time, and Bill Dodgen was actually in charge, and sort of Bill sort of had a situation, and he said, well, you know, just generally didn't want to sign me. So he said, you're free to sort of go. And in the end, the former guy took Malcolm McDonald, Harry Hedler. He took Malcolm McDonald to Luton. He said, if they ever let you go, just give me a call and come to Luton. And that's what I did. And he kept by his word and went down, signed up. And yeah, it was great. You know, it all started again. You know, it was very disappointing at Fulham. You know, any young kid, regardless who they are, even nowadays, the minute you're getting a no when you're going up to see if you're going to sign pro, it is really like a little bit hurtful at the time. You know, you just can't believe it, but it's sort of part of life, really. I mean, I was one of the lucky ones. I got a club reasonably quickly and went forward, you know.
I mean, because, you know, you're a London lad. You were born sort of like in West London. So, I mean, it must have been, was it quite, I know Luton's not too far out of London, but it must have been a bit of a strain to actually sort of think, well, I'm not in London anymore. You know, this doesn't feel right.
As a kid, like, you know, you just sort of like going down to Fulham and one thing another, and then like, you know, it's sort of 20 minutes from your house. Here you are, you're going to King's Cross, St Pancras, getting a train to Luton, you're there. You know, 2, 3, 4 hours coming back, you know, you're not getting back till sort of 6 at night and stuff. And it was a bit difficult. You know, in the end, it was late so many times, I had to go and move in there in Diggs. So, you know.
Lovely place, Luton.
It was fun, though, yeah, in them days.
So, I mean, had you converted to defence by this time? And had you sort of effectively signed as a pro at Fulham and then while you were at Luton, you were still in defence?
Yeah, I was at Luton sort of... I was basically a right fullback, and they were sort of, you know, sort of grooming me to take over from one of the older guys who was playing. And I eventually got my chance, and then I sort of kept in the side for 10, 12 games. And like the sort of young players do, you lose your form a little bit, and then, like, you know, they drop you out and then they bring you back a bit. And that's what happened to me. I got sort of played about 8, 10 games, and then sort of like the other guy come back in, and I got back in towards the end of the season, and, you know, got a bit of experience, you know, sort of really enjoyed it, learned the old rough and tumble sort of second division it was then, and you know, I was better for it, really. Yeah.
So how long were you at Luton for?
I was at Luton for about 5 years 6 years.
Yeah. So you're kind of into the sort of like the peak of your career then, I suppose. You're into your mid-20s by this time.
I was, yeah. I mean, Luton, we had a decent side at Luton as well, you know. We sort of, we weren't like a flashy team, but we had a lot of players who sort of got the job done on the day. And, you know, we only had a real small ground. That was one of the sort of disadvantages.
Still do,
you know. Yeah, you know, it's sort of, in them days, the field was really quite sort of treacherous as well when it rained. You know, like QPR, they was the sort of second team to put the AstroTurf down.
Yeah, yes.
You know, and it's sort of, it would have helped the home sort of players in that, because some games you play down there, when you had 2 or 3 days rain, it was virtually it was impossible to play football. It was just get it and move it forward as quick as you could.
Yeah, quite. So you know, I suppose probably at the peak of your career then, in that case, you know, you're at your, you know, the highest that you can get. You actually then signed for a QPR team that was really on the up by this time. How did all that come about? I mean, you're going from Luton.
Well, when I went with Luton, it was the sort of summer of, I think it was 1974. Mm-hmm. The World Cup was in Germany. And there was some owners of an Australian team who came over to sign a goalkeeper. And basically, Harry didn't want to let the goalie go. And then he sort of tried to persuade him. And the keeper said, in the end, I don't want to go. And they said, look, we've got a player who's played all the games in the first team. Do you want to take him? So I ended up going to Australia, playing there in the sort of Premier League they had there. And I met Dave Sexton at that point. And Dave was at Chelsea at that time, I believe. And then at a later point, he signed me at QPR.
Former Albion player in the 50s as well, at that rate, you know. So QPR had just won the previous year had won the second division. I think actually Dave Sexton had clearly got a decent side together.
Well, Dave was a real football man, you know. He used to visit frequently Holland and Germany, you know, looking for new ideas, looking different styles of play. Then he'd sort of come back and then we'd have a training session. He'd sort of implement it in the training session and it would be interesting. It'd be something different, you know. Yeah, I don't know what Pep Guardiola does, but he seems to have, you know, brought a lot to the table at Man City, different style of play. I know they're spending loads and loads of money, so you'd expect the players to, you know, be, you know, fantastic, but you've still got to play the system and you've still got to be comfortable on the ball. And that's what sort of Dave used to sort of build into the players, you know.
I mean, when you look back on that time, and I'm zeroing in on 1976 here, when QPR you know, it's probably one of those things. It's not dissimilar to Brighton. I suppose that the equivalent would be, you know, like a couple of seasons ago, we had the title within our grasp, and you know, and I'm not trying to bring up any old wounds here, but I mean that was a sensational QPR side that you had. You had, you know, you use the phrase, it's a textbook thing of youth and experience. When you see that side, I mean that starting 11, that regular starting 11 was, there was, everyone had, there was so much quality about them. I mean, I suppose that must have been, I don't know, actually explain it to me. Was it sort of exhilarating and disappointing? When it came to the end of that season where you lost the title on the last game of the season?
Yeah, when Dave signed me, I was obviously going there as, you know, backup to Dave Clement, you know, who was the England fullback at the time, and Ian Gillard was the other England fullback at the time. So I knew that, like, you know, I'm going there as just sort of like a bench player, you know, with a hope of getting on, proving I could do it, and then sort of maybe getting a run in the team. But, you know, in them days, there was only one sub, and the guys never wanted to come off. You know, you'd be sat there in the bench. You know, I put about 6-8 pounds on me about four games, just sat there, never ever got on. It was like you had to wait for an injury, and you didn't really, you know, you didn't want any of that sort of stuff. So it was very, very competitive. Out of all the clubs I've been, when you'd sort of train in the morning, it was a real proper training session. There weren't no hiding places out there. You know, it was almost like game tackles and stuff like that. Normally in training, you know, you ease off, you don't get a little bit too excited out there. And but at QPR in them days, it was full on. The training sessions in the morning were absolutely full on and intense, you know?
Sure, but I mean, like I say, a hell of a time. I mean, it's you look back on that and you know, when, like I say, when you see that side, and obviously you're a part of it anyway, irrespective of the fact of whether you consider yourself a, you know, the number 12 each time, you're actually part of something that was absolutely incredible, and just one of those things where you think, you know, the history books could be saying 1976 QPR League champions.
Well, really, it probably should have done. I mean, it was a strange thing for me, because I actually broke through with about four or five games to go. And we played Newcastle at Newcastle, which I played fullback, and we won. Mm-hmm. Then we played Man City at home. I played fullback, and we won. I really did think I was playing well, and Dave Clement was coming back. And, like, you know, Dave is a big, strong guy. Poor Dave is not with us anymore, but he was, like, as a player, he was really sort of real competitive, strong, strong player. And he wasn't the nimble player. I was a little bit more nimble than Dave. I was a little bit more sort of sharper, like, you know, maybe crossing the ball and that. But he'd be a little bit stronger than me. And when we went to Norwich, Dave didn't pick me. I was absolutely gutted. Out of all my football I've ever played, I've never been so gutted in my life not to play in a game. And I just sort of, as a QPR man as well, brought up in the bush and all that carry on, it was sort of like, you know, I was so disappointed. Obviously, I wanted the guys to win, of course I did, and I wanted, you know, us to win the league and be part of it, but it just weren't to be. You know, Norwich really, they sort of proved a little bit of a sort of bogey side for us over the years, and, you know, but going back to that season, yeah, I mean, some fantastic players. I mean, we had the captain of England, Jerry Francis. I mean, he was riddled with injuries, back injuries and stuff. But when Jerry was fit and playing, you know, he was fantastic. Yeah. Don Masson, Scottish international, you know, Givens, Irish, Bowles international, Dave Thomas international.
Yeah.
The only two that weren't were Frank McClintock and Davey Webb, the two centre-halves of all the experience, two tremendous centre-halves. You know, we got them at the latter end of their careers at 34, 35. But,
and let's face it, McClintock had won the double. So,
oh, Frank was inspirational. He was incredible.
Yeah.
He used to come train in the mornings like a cripple. He used to be hobbling around like a dog with three legs. And it was like, you go, you're right, Frank. I'm all right. And they'd go out and he'd warm up in 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and he'd be perfect. And then on the Saturday, he wasn't a big, big centre-half, but he could really leap. And, like, you know, the big centre-forward never got the better of Frank, you know. But he was tremendous to be around. He was a great guy, yeah.
Fantastic. So let's fast forward 5 years. Now, by this time, QPR have been relegated. I mean, it's one of those sort of like quirks of thing that when Brighton got promoted in 79, QPR got relegated. And when Brighton got relegated in 83, QPR got promoted again. So there was this huge, great big long stretch of Brighton not playing. I think it was something ridiculous like 1973 to 2001 at with Dean. So I think 73 was the last time that QPR played Brighton at the Goldstone. And obviously there had been certain parallels between Brighton and QPR with their third division history. I mean, obviously then QPR went into the second and first division in the late 60s, but there's a long sort of standing history. I'm not say a rivalry, but a long standing history. So let's go to the summer of 1981. Brighton have just avoided relegation, and what's happened? Are you surplus to requirements at QPR? What's the story that you've come here?
Requirements. Me and Terry Venables had a disagreement about, like, you know, the tactical performance. You know, the way we were playing one time at Newcastle. He wanted to push up. I thought we'd been better off easing back. It's a very windy day. This, that, and the other. Anyway, we had a big argument about it. We got resolved. We didn't sort of carry on, but, like, you know, three or four games later, he sort of left me out, Terry, and obviously it's not working here, Terry, and, you know, it was his decision. He was the boss, he was the manager, had a lot of good players there, and we sort of come to an agreement, and by mutual consent, he said, well, if you want to go, Don, you know, I'm prepared to let you go. So
it kind of hurt. It must hurt, surely.
Well, it sort of did, the way it was. But I'm sort of like, you know, I see Terry now and then. I've had a drink with him a couple of times, and we're good friends. And it's just when you're sort of playing, you have different views. And my view was about something, and he didn't have the same view. So it was getting to a point that it was not going to be working for the two of us. So, you know, he said, no, I won't stand in your way. If you want to leave, that's fine. So I took the option to go. But, like, you know, I had to sort of go just before the end of the season, as opposed to have all the summer money and do all the bits and pieces. I had to make the decision there and then, and I made the decision. And to be honest with you, for a couple of months, it looked like I made the absolute wrong decision of a lifetime. You know, there weren't no clubs coming in. I'm thinking, what have I done here? And then John Collins, who used to be at Luton as coach, he went to Mike Bailey at Brighton, and sort of John sort of recommended me. I came along and went on tour with them, and after we'd been on tour and played the games, they sort of offered me a contract, and we went on from there.
I mean, the kind of the perverse thing about it is that Brighton had just spent $300,000 on another fullback from QPR, John Gregory.
I know John.
So you think, well, we just nabbed two fullbacks, one for a lot of money and one for nothing from the same club, you know, and from a second division club at that. I mean, it's only Brighton could do that, really, I think.
Yeah, I mean, what it is, I think, really, you know, I had a lot of experience. I've been playing.
Sure.
And, you know, sometimes when you've been around and you need a fresh start, you need something new. And I've been at QPR probably too long, if I'm honest, and maybe got a little bit stale. But the challenge to go to Brighton really sort of recharged the batteries. And, you know, we're up there and you just let Mark Lawrenson go to Liverpool. And here I am signing on and getting in the side. So, you know, it suited me and it suited Brighton, which...
Absolutely. Well, you played for the vast majority of that season. I mean, apart from a clump in the middle, but you were actually, you know, a major part of the, and we have to say this, the most successful Brighton team in terms of league position in our history. So tell us about, you know, your that season, you know, while you were, you know, you're playing regularly at fullback.
Well, we had a sort of, I used to sort of call us a little bit like the movie, The Dirty Dozen. You know, we were like guys put together and we just gelled. And, like, you know, we had the guy up front who was brilliant, Michael Robinson. You know, you, as a defender, you'd hit the hopeful ball and somehow Robbo would get it.
Yeah.
You know, and then we had like the likes of, you know, Tony Grealish, who was a great guy. Tony's not with us either anymore, but he was a tremendous midfield player. Never got the credit he should have got, you know. If you asked any of the players, you know, Grealish in midfield, you know, he was a huge competitor.
Absolutely.
A competitor in there for us, you know. And we had little Neil McNabb, who was sort of tricky.
Mm-hmm.
And in the defence, you know, we had Mosley in goal, obviously.
Yep.
Gatting, you know, Sammy Nelson, Fozzie, you know, larger than life, Fozzie.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we there was a lot of good players in the team. You know, Gary Stevens coming through as a youngster. And, you know, you just sort of felt that, if we could have sort of transferred our away form to the home game and been a bit more sort of daring, then, you know, I felt that, like, we could have probably gone a little bit higher. I mean, what happened was Mike Bamber, really, you know, said the fans really aren't enjoying the home performances because we're a little bit too boring.
Did you actually... Really, I'm going to interrupt you there, Don. Sorry, mate.
Yeah.
I mean, let's look at that from a historical perspective. Would you... I mean, I think that was the thing that was seen to be the case and led to Bailey's downfall later, the following season. Do you agree with that assessment that you felt that we were boring?
No, I didn't, no. I mean, I think, you know, everything's sort of relative. You're playing against top-quality opposition. when we're away, we can sort of like sit back a little bit, you know, get on the counter attack. You know, we can like slow the game down a little bit and come away with something. And when we come at home, it was a little bit more the boots on the other foot. We've now got to come forward a little bit, and these good teams are sort of picking us off. And it meant, do we sort of play a little bit more defensively, you know, get the numbers behind the ball? I mean, I watched a game the other week, Newcastle-Chelsea. Well, I've never seen Newcastle ever play like that in my life. We never played like that at home.
Right.
We tried to attack. You know, we had our limitations, you know, but we did try to attack. We did try and support the front. We did try and get there. You know, but on possession fronts, you know, we play a lot of teams at home, and, you know, they would have quite a lot of possession. They might not turn it into goals, but they'd have possession. But we got to the point where we had to play a little bit more open Cavalier-style football, and really and truly, we weren't collectively good enough to sort of, you know, on the counter-attacks and quick breaks from the other team, you know, it was sort of... We're leaving ourselves open, if I'm honest. You know, we were good, but we had to be sort of careful in the way we played. And if we had carried on as we were, like before, we had to be a bit more cavalier at home, we would have finished four or five more places up the league for sure, maybe six.
Sure, sure. I mean, there's the classic example of...
But I do also feel for the fans. They want to be entertained. Mm. They might not have thought it was entertainment per se, but, like, you know, the likes of Manchester United and, you know, all the big clubs, Liverpool's and that coming down there, yeah. You know, these games are tough, tough games, you know.
Well, I was just going to say, one of the games was Liverpool at home. We were 3-1 down with 10 minutes to go and then sort of still managed to pull it back. You know, I think it was one of those sort of great, great recoveries. You know, I think we were...
Yeah, that's right. That was a great game. It was one of my better games.
But I think, you know...
No, go on. I remember that one. Yeah, I mean, that was great. I mean, the fans were terrific that day. I mean, they got right behind the team. You know, you can sense it. The minute, you know, we get a goal and all of a sudden they've gone 3-1 up and then we're pressing, then we go 3-2.
An irony of irony.
3-3.
Irony of ironies, it's Jimmy Case that leads the charge.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think I crossed that ball into Jimmy, then I crossed one into Andy Richardson who scored. But it was certainly a big game, and I was so pleased for everybody. The fans were delighted. You know, I think at that day they got value for money, and everyone enjoyed the game. And I mean, we talk about the game like you're talking now. You know, if I'm in sort of bar and talking to someone, and you say, "What's the best game at sort of Brighton?" They say, "Well, that was a great game."
Sure.
And when I see the game the other week where the boys come back at Southampton, draw 2-2, we went there and got a good result at Southampton as well, you know, against the Keegans and Mitch Shannons. And it was really, you know, it's about the crowd, it's about the fans at times. You know, we've all been a fan before we've been footballers. And we all know what it's like to be behind the goal and want the team to win. And when you do get the momentum going and the fans do get behind you, and it was the goal scoring ground then, I mean, there was a huge atmosphere there.
I mean, obviously, if you have to bear in mind that in those days as well, I think this was Bamba's main complaint, was that there was falling attendances generally anyway. I mean, there was at the Goldstone, and I think that possibly being boring is a little harsh, because, like I say, attendances were... I mean, he needed an excuse.
Right.
But attendances were falling across the country anyway. There were, anyway, one, it was being priced out. I mean, £2 at the time was a horrific amount to get in. Two, there was the nonsense on the terraces going on anyway.
Yeah, thank God all that stopped more or less.
Yeah, it was pretty horrific. And the point is that was Bamba's consideration. And I think that probably, you know, with Bailey, yes, it may have been not particularly entertaining, but I think
the pressure was put on Mike. You know, Bailey.
Yeah.
And, you know, we tried to be a bit more open and we got punished a few times. Plus, it's all towards the end of the season and we'd had a long season. We were a little bit sort of jaded, you know, and, you know, sort of things don't go as you expect when it gets to the latter part of the year. And we didn't get the rub of the green in a lot of games, but at the end of the day, the results were poor the last 7-8 games.
I was about to say, I mean, the team was doing about sort of 7th or 8th place, and then just those last half dozen, 8 games, something like that, just fell away a bit. The season just sort of like, you know, grounds or halt in the middle of nowhere kind of thing. And having said that, 13th is still our best ever finish. I mean, we'd still bite your hand off of that right now, and this is in a smaller division. So, you know, you're an intrinsic part of that, sort of, you know, that greatest in terms of league. I mean, never mind the cup stuff that came later, but in terms of the league position, you were part of it. And then this sort of kind of carried on the next season. You know, the results weren't necessarily going your way, but when it came to something like November and the team was in 17th and, again, attendances were falling, you know, Mike Bailey, you know, had, you know, in terms of Bamba's consideration, Bailey had to go just because he wanted, you know, Bamba wanted more bums on seats. With 36 years hindsight, do you feel that Bailey was fairly treated?
Well, I suppose once you own the club and you want to make the decisions and you're seeing like the territory's not as full as they should be, you might be seeing performances that you don't particularly like and you're getting a sort of negative press. Maybe you thought it was time for a change. But I would say that Mike Bailey, he's a tough manager, a coach, an honest person. And like you knew where you were with Mike and probably they maybe should have given a little bit longer. Yeah.
So Mike Bailey went and that was largely, your career done at the Albion. So looking back on it, what are your memories, your overall impressions of playing for the Albion?
Well, I've got to be honest, it was a great club. It wasn't a huge club. You know, you were there, you knew everybody, you had the groundsman and everybody seemed to have a bit of fun and, everyone was sort of there helping each other. It was, one of them sort of clubs. You didn't really get situations where people come to training and you never see them. The people go and have a social lunch and, everybody sort of mingled together. And, I sort of felt that way with it. And I thought the fans were great. They really were. They really, good set of fans and right behind the team. Appreciated good football. And I appreciate, tryers, people having a go out there. And I've got lots of memories, as I say, the sort of Liverpool games and stuff. There was one real negative game, which was horrible. Probably everyone who played in it was the game where we got beat in the FA Cup by Oxford 3-0.
Yeah.
That was probably the most negative game ever for Brighton, I think. It was totally unexpected. And
what happened?
One of them sort of situations. Well, what happened is they basically got a reprieve. We didn't even know we were going to be playing up to the Thursday. They had to put X amount of money into the Football League or something, or they were going to go out of business. And I think it might have been Maxwell or someone, or one of the big guys put the money in, and they turned up on the Saturday like wild men. And we sort of really probably weren't properly prepared mentally.
True.
And they came out and they went bang, 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 and that was us,
I
think it's all the mental thing, It's like when you look at these big teams and they go play the small side and somehow they don't win.
Mm.
It's because I don't think they're ready for the game. We weren't ready for the Oxford game. Because, number one, we didn't really think we'd be playing because it didn't look like, the fine was going to get paid. So we'd have got to buy our ticket to the next round. And then when we were playing, we obviously thought, well, this is going to be easy. And before we've got our backside kicked, and quite rightly so, yeah.
Let's fast forward to 2018. Now, as you said at the top of this show, you're an OAP these days. So what is this OAP doing running the New York Marathon? Tell us about that.
Well, I don't really know. I opened my big mouth and someone said, well, go on. You
put your money where your mouth is. Yeah, go on.
We'll sort it all out. We'll organise everything and bump, bump, bump. And I'll run for Stan. I'll run for the Alzheimer's dementia and raise some money for the research. And, there's a foundation at QPR, the Number 10 Foundation, which has been set up recently to help former players, older players who might have fallen on hard times, might need sort of assistance with operations or anything like that. So that's part of it as well. So I took up the challenge. I've been training now for 6 months. I know what it's like now to, as in, go out at 4:30 in the morning as opposed to come in at 4:30 in the morning. And, I'm into the training. I'm off to New York. The event is on Sunday, November the 4th.
Mm-hmm.
It's not too far away now. It's that sort of time where I'm just getting a little bit nervous,
But you must have some good. You must have some good physio. I mean, are the likes of QPR or someone else offering you sort of physical advice, that kind of thing?
I've got a guy, a personal trainer, Juan Garcia, a Spanish guy. He's running loads of marathons. He's done the Ironman thing, and he set a program out for me, and stepped to the sort of program as best I could. It's amazing, how many miles you have to do get under your belt before you actually even can feel that you've got any chance of completing 26 miles. I mean, I was running 10 miles. It seemed like forever.
Good grief.
So I'm I'm up there now. I'm around about 16, 18 miles.
Okay.
I could run that, so I'm quite happy with that. I do feel I'll get round the event, but it would be nice if people would go out their way and maybe donate a couple of pounds if they can.
Okay, so in order to do so, let's just mentioned it earlier, and we were talking about the QPR side of the mid-70s. Now, you were mentioning that it's I think that probably the inspiration for it is your old mucker, Stan Bowles, who was probably one of the better strikers for England, certainly in the league in the mid-70s, who isn't quite so well these days. So
no, I went up to see him actually about 3-4 weeks ago, and he's really, he's doing the best he can, but he's just not with the program.
He's got Alzheimer's, yeah?
He's got it fully blown, and therefore there's no reversal. It's just sort of slow, continuous deterioration.
Mm.
And
he's going to be going into a home. The family, Andrew's daughter, looks after him. And she said, look, I want to get Christmas and New Year out of the way. Come January, we're all considering putting Dad in the home full time. And, that's going to help them. I'm going to help the research for the Dementia Alzheimer's Group. And also the Number 10 Foundation that can possibly be helping me maybe at a later point in my life if I maybe need replacement or whatever it might be, you know. So there's, I'm happy with those sort of three charities to go out there and
absolutely
have a run and hopefully I get round.
If people want to support what it is you're doing and financially, you know, say make a donation and financially back you, how do they do it? Where do they go to make the donation?
Well, they go on Don Frank's Facebook and there's three links there. And there'll be a link for the Alzheimer's Dementia. There'll be a link for Stan Bowles and there'll be a link for Number 10 Foundation. All of them, whatever they put in, they'll be making a difference and it really will be fantastic. And I really do appreciate it. And it will give me a bit of inspiration. I need to run that last 10 miles.
Okay, so we'll come and find you on Facebook. So it's facebook.com. Look for Don Shanks. And there'll be, I think that the main picture you're looking for is in a picture of you and Stan Bowles together, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, and like I say, I mean, if you search out, if you want to go onto Google and find out what Don Shanks looked like back in the day for the album, he didn't wear the stripes, we wore plain blue in those days with British Caledonian written across the chest.
That's right. Yeah.
Handsome devil you were, you know, it's, you know, not I'm trying to pull you or anything like that, but, you know. So, yeah, if you want to...
Those were the days, Alan.
Those were the days.
We had crazy days in Woody's Wine Bar down there somewhere near the beach in Brighton. That was a bad venue in regards to the Wednesday afternoon.
So going to Brighton, actually, you know, the party city was probably about the last place you should have come, really, isn't it?
Well, that's right, yeah. In this sort of summer, all them young ladies on the beach, it's rather dangerous for the single footballers, yeah.
Well, it's rather dangerous for the rest of us as well, even at our age, so, you know. So if you want to back Don for doing the New York Marathon, go to facebook.com and search out Don Shanks. But there's also, I think it's on the crowdfunder site. So we'll post the links that you can make your donation to on our Twitter and Facebook page as well. Please, if you can spare a few quid, chuck it at Don for his New York Marathon, and it's going towards Alzheimer's and Alzheimer's research, and I think this is very worthwhile. So please, if you do get a chance to do so, do that, Don.
Yeah, Alan. So listen, all the Brighton fans, I'd just like to say a big thank you to them as well. They were tremendous for me when I was there. We had lots of good times, and I really do hope the club go forward, maintain their position, and get into Europe next year.
Wow, now there's a target to... You know, I assume that you do keep in touch with all how your ex-clubs are going. You know, are you sort of, you know...
Well, I do. Well, Chris Ramsey, who took my place at Brighton when I left, and Chris played in the cup final. He's a good friend of mine. I see Chris quite often.
Mm.
And Perry Digweed, who's a goalkeeper. Perry lives in London. I meet Perry
now. An actor,
so,
yes.
So just tell all the fans the boys are okay. We're all right. And
certainly will.
Everybody's well.
Brilliant. What more can I say? Don Shanks, former Albion fullback, thank you very much indeed for coming on to the Albion Raw.
My pleasure, Alan. And good luck to everybody. And let's hope it's a successful season.
Okay, you are listening to the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. Future Whip, delighted to be brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com. And we have got a brilliant shirt for you this week here, Al.
Okay, it's passing over to me.
It's the printer, it is blue.
Okay, it is blue, but we're in a very sort of dodgy light studio here. So I'm looking at a blue, I think, white shirt. Now, there's shades of the Phoenix Brewery shirt with the Adidas horizontal stripes across the top of the chest. The badge clearly isn't the Albion. It's not that obvious as to what it is. It's a shield with a diagonal stripe going through it. I'm certainly going to guess that it's going to be mid to late 80s. As to who the club is, I wouldn't have a clue because there's no shirt sponsor. There's no, the manufacturer's there, Adidas. Apart from that, no idea. So I'm going to just throw one completely out there and say something from Chile.
It's not from Chile, no. Actually, but it is practically, apart from that bottom white stripe, it is identical to the Phoenix Brewery shirt.
It is, yes. So is that white stripe hiding anything?
No, it's not, no.
Okay.
But this is the 1986 away shirt of Croatian Prva Liga side Rijeka. Now, Rijeka is, of course, where England played Croatia last night. See what's going on there. The club was founded as Sportsko Drutsko Kavana on the 29th of July 1946 after Rijeka, known by its Italian name Flume, until 1945, was ceded from Italy to Yugoslavia following the end of the World War II. They play at the 8,729 capacity Stadion Ružvica, and Stadion Ružvica is part of Rijeka's new training centre and it serves as the club's temporary home ground following the demolition of the old Kandrida Stadium, and the new state-of-the-art 14,600 all-seater stadium will be built in the same location.
You've been practising, haven't you?
Rijeka are the third most successful Croatian football club, having won one Croatian football first division title, two Yugoslav Cups, four Croatian football cups, one Croatian football super cup, and the 1977 Balkans Cup. Rijeka's greatest rivalry is with Hajduk Split, and since 1946, the Adriatic Derby is contested between the two most popular Croatian football clubs from the Adriatic coast, Rijeka and Hajduk. The other rivalries exist with Dinamo Zagreb and at regional level with Istra Pula.
You're making these up now, aren't you?
And the origins of the Rijeka Pula rivalry date back to clashes between Fluama and Grion. Since the late 1920s. Apart from the fact that the shirt is nigh on identical to our 1986 home shirt, there are no Albion links, although former Albion keeper Peter Brezovan has apparently been spotted busking around the city. Thank you, Phil.
Thank you, Phil. Bit weird. I hope you're enjoying your time in America, and I'm glad that we cut in on your holiday doing that, watching US second division football in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Now, Al, back to this shirt, though. I mean,
go on.
It's
your all-time favourite shirt, isn't it?
It is my all-time favourite Albion shirt, yeah.
And yet it's not a striped one. Well, there's three horizontal stripes.
Depending on who you ask, if you go through, if you had a poll... of who or everyone's favourite Albion shirt was, that will be in the top three.
I suspect it would, actually, and yet it defies every single convention about the tradition of the Albion. We are a team in blue and white stripes, and I have spent the majority. I mean, there was a short time in the late 40s, there was the 6 years in the late 60s, and there was about 3 or 4 years in the 80s where we had plainish blue shirts. And yet, apart from that, we've always worn stripes. Now, is there a reason, apart from the fact you like it? I mean, I want some artistic answer here, Adrian. Why do you like this particular 80s offering?
I think it was the first Albion shirt I ever had.
Ah, right.
It was worn by Steve Penny, and everyone knows how much I love Steve Penny. There's a brilliant picture of Dean Saunders wearing it with his balls hanging out, which is...
yeah.
And it just coincides with my favourite time of watching the Albion. Basically.
There's also a red version of it as well.
It was, which we wore away at Peterborough.
Peterborough, yes.
Which we didn't beat this week in the
We sort of
JPT
did, yes.
Or Checker Trade.
So I mean, I think that in that case, my favourite shirt is probably the first one that I had, and that is your 1978-79 Buchter shirt. Mm. I got it given for it for my 9th birthday. The entire kit, which I recall was the shirt, shorts, boots, and socks and boots, £22 from David Rose Sports in Dyke Road, and that was a lot of money for my mum and dad. It was a lot of money, probably full stop. It was a lot of money for my mum and dad. Mm. But yeah, that's my shirt, and I've got a feeling Phil's got one of those originally. Yeah, there's no way it fits him, but it's a kind of really rough knit. It's not your nipple burning stuff of the 80s, and it's not your sort of. To be honest, I don't know what the current shirts look like. I haven't had one for about 15 years. But
they're good for that. They are not nipple graters.
Oh, okay.
Which that old Buchter one was. But I mean, let us know. I mean, let's put it out there. Let us know what is your favourite Albion shirt of all time
and why.
And why. And just come to us on our Facebook group or on our Twitter page. What is your favourite Albion shirt? Okay, well, Al's been busy again, and he's had two more guests in for the ever-popular A Question of Raw.
Thank you, and welcome indeed to the second edition of A Question of Raw. My name's Alan Wares, and I am going to be upsetting two more victims who are sitting in front of me in the studio with 20 questions relating to the Albion and football in general. On my left, I'm delighted to welcome back to the Raw studio, Jared Evans. Jared, how are you, mate?
Very good, Alan, thank you.
That's good to know. And Russell Guyver is on my right. He is going to be facing Jared today. Russ, are you okay, mate?
Yeah, I'm great, thanks.
Okay, great stuff. Let's crack on. We tossed the coin earlier. It hasn't come down yet, so we've decided that Jared is going to take the first set of questions. Quite simply, it's going to be 2 points for a correct answer. An incorrect answer will be handed on to the other person, unless there's a couple of questions that come up with an either or, and that's not really going to sort of be fair then. So, let's see who is going to win the battle of you two in terms of your head brains. Jared. And this first round is all about Brighton and Hove Albion. Jared, who scored Brighton and Hove Albion's first goal last season?
James Tilley.
James Tilley is right for 2 points, and there was absolutely no hesitation. Mm. Russell looks sick. And your first question this afternoon, Russ. Who scored Brighton's first goal this season?
First goal this season? Is it Gross? Pascal Gross?
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
I can't give you the points there. Jared, can you nick in for a bonus point here?
Glenn Murray.
That's an early lead that Jared has. And Russell, I think, is going to cry. Your second question, Jared. Which manager signed Glenn Murray first time round?
Dean Wilkins.
You're on fire, mate. Two more points. And for you, Russ. Oh, please don't cry. Not just yet. Which manager signed Gary Hart?
Gary Hart. Would that be... it wouldn't be Hinchelwood, would it?
Are you asking me?
Oh, I'm just saying it as my answer, yeah.
That's your final answer?
Yeah.
I've got to throw it over to back to Jared.
Would it be Brian Houghton?
Brian Houghton it is. I fear a clean sweep so far.
Can I go now?
Yeah. See ya. Jared, your third question. In terms of the number of league matches, and this is an either-or which I can't throw open. In terms of number of league matches, who had the shorter reign, Sammy Hoopier or Russell Slade?
Would that be permanent manager?
As a permanent manager. Of those two?
I would say Russell Slade.
No, it wasn't. It was Sammy Hoopier had 22 league games as manager. Russell Slade had 29.
Yeah, I would have got that one wrong as well, actually. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's see if we can actually get some points on the board for you, Russ. In terms of the number of league matches, who had the shorter reign? Jeff Wood or Martin Hinshelwood?
That's got to be quite close, I'm guessing.
That's not the answer I'm looking for.
In terms of the specifics, I'm going to have to guess it because I don't know for sure. So let's go with Hinshelwood.
I'm afraid you haven't got any points on the board. Oh. Jeff Wood, 13 games. Martin Hinshelwood, 14.
I would have said Wood as well.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't offering that to you, so too bad.
I got it wrong again.
Question four for you now, Jared. Who was the first player to come on as a sub this season?
Bong.
Is that your answer?
Yeah.
2 points. Came on.
Bruno, wasn't it?
Bruno. Yeah. Okay, Russ, please, let's have some points. I mean, let's not trying to make this too embarrassing.
I'm feeling like Cardiff City here. Yeah?
Name either of the other two players who came on as sub in that match for the Albion. Either of the other two.
Right, so... Bissouma.
Finally.
Thankfully.
And the other one was Ali Jackenbach. I think they're the only other subs that have come on at all anyway, apart from... question five for you, Jared. Are you two okay, by the way?
Absolutely
perfect.
Yeah,
all good.
Okay, fine.
I've just got my game face on. Yeah. Very much in the zone.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, and Russ isn't. Yeah. in 2012-13 season, from which club did we borrow Wayne Bridge?
It's Man City.
Yep. Well done. 2 points to you. And for you, Russ, in the same season, 2012-13, from which club did we borrow Dean Hammond?
Hammond, so that would have been It's either going to be Leicester or Southampton, so I'm going to go for Leicester.
I can't give you that point. Jared, from where did we borrow Dean Hammond?
I thought it was Leicester. I will go Southampton.
Southampton for a point.
I feel really bad about that point.
But the point, it's his fault.
Yeah, I know. I realised as soon as I said it, I thought, probably shouldn't have given my other ideas.
Question number six for you. In the first decade of this century, two players finished top scorer on three separate occasions. Name both.
Glenn Murray and Nicky Forster.
I can't give you that. Russell?
Oh, definitely think Glenn Murray's one. And then I think, is it Bobby Zamora?
The answer is
Barnes.
Bobby Zamora and Nicky Forster. So between you, got it. Russ, your question. In the 1990s, two players finished top scorer twice. Name both.
Okay, I'm going to say Gary Nelson as one in the 90s. The other one, Kurt Nogan.
I can't give you those points. There's a possibility of a bonus for you here, Jared.
I would say Richie Barker and Kurt Nogan.
I can't give you that point either. Kurt Nogan was correct. The other one was Junior McDougald.
And Nelson had gone, hadn't he, by the 90s?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. Yeah. Well, yeah.
I think more or less.
Jared, your question, number seven. Still Miles in the lead. And Russell's still looking up, sort of hopefully and forlornly, up your trouser leg. Number seven, when Brighton were promoted from the old third division in 1988, who went up as champions?
That was 2 years before I was born. just to make everyone feel really old. So it'll be a complete stab in the dark and say Southampton.
No, Russ, there's a bonus point on offer here.
Right, so winners of the 87-88 season.
Third division. We finished second. Who finished top?
Was it Northampton Town?
No, the answer was Sunderland. Sunderland beat us by quite a distance, actually. Russell, your question number seven. When Brighton were promoted from the old third division in 1977, who went up as champions?
77. Got to think carefully now. Got some catching up to do here.
Yeah, don't list every single club that it might be this time.
This is a very long time before I was born.
It's slightly before I was supporting, not that that matters. I should still know this.
Well, I did want to do questions about promotions, but, you know, with us not being champions, and I could have done one from 2 years ago. That's about it.
Oh, yeah, that would have been nice. But anyway, let's say Southampton.
No. Jared, there's a bonus point on offer to you.
Tottenham.
In the third division. Wow.
I don't know.
Mansfield Town. It was Mansfield. And Palace managed to sneak into third place on the last day of the season ahead of Wrexham. But let's not talk about that. Question eight, Jared. And I know this was after you were born. Which street was the postal address of the Goldston ground?
Goldston Way?
No, Russ.
The street?
Yeah. So if you sent a letter or something to the Goldston ground, what was the street you had to address it to?
Is it something like Goldstone Villas?
No, I'm afraid the answer was Newtown Road.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Newtown Road. And, Russ, your question, which street was the postal address of Withdean Stadium? And this was after Jared was born.
Is there a Withdean Way?
It wasn't Withdean Way, Jared.
Withdean Lane.
Nearly. It's Tongdean Lane.
Oh, yes.
Tongdean Lane. You've stopped answering correct now, haven't you, a pair of you? Is this just to make me feel bad? Because if it is, it's not working. You wait till I really get started.
I'm trying to give him a chance.
These are the easy ones.
Sorry?
I'm trying to give him a chance.
Of course you are. He's not taking you up on it. Right. Question nine. And this is after you were born, Jared. Of all players who have a squad number at the Albion this season and who are not out on loan, who is the first player alphabetically by their surname?
Who isn't out on loan?
Who isn't out on loan?
Ben Barkley.
I'm going to hand that over to Russ, who looks like he's about to leap in for a bonus point.
I was actually going to say Ben Barkley. I think I'll say something else now. so I'll need a moment to think about what I'm going to say. I'm going to say Lewis Dunk.
When I've just told you that Ben Barkley's wrong.
Give him another go. Go on.
I am going to give you another go, but I am going to leave that in.
So can you repeat the question? I think I've got lost.
Of all players who have a squad number at the Albion this season who are not out on loan, who is the first alphabetically? And that groan from Jared makes me think he's just got it.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to have a guess at Bernardo.
The answer is Florin Andone.
Oh, of course, yes, of course. It is.
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
And Russell. Oh.
God. We've not seen him. He doesn't exist.
Exactly. I don't believe he exists.
I feel like this is a bad episode of Grange Hill. Of all players, Russ, your question 9 is about time you scored some points. Who have a squad number at the Albion this season who are not out on loan? Who is the last player alphabetically?
Last player alphabetically, not on loan. If we're going strictly on surnames, I'm just wondering, pondering the notion of Bruno's. Well, I'm going to go with that. I'll say Bruno Saltor.
That's not correct. Jared, there's a bonus point on offer. Who is the last player alphabetically who's not on loan, who has a squad number?
I'm just doing the alphabet in my head. might be a while.
Is there a time limit on this one?
Not at all. B follows A, C follows B, D but follows...
I keep going at LMLP, that's the only thing. I honestly can't think of anyone... we've got with the last name that begins with a T, and I'm probably going to look really stupid for that.
I've thought of another option, but I'm too late now.
I'm going to say Jason Steele.
He's second to last. The answer is
Stevens, isn't it?
Marcus Suttner.
Yeah.
And of all those who do have a squad number that are on loan, the actual answer of all of them is actually Christian Walton. But he is on loan, so... Okay. Question 10. You're halfway point through this torture.
Only halfway. Blimey.
Question 10. for you, Jared. Who was the first Brighton player to score for the England under-21s?
Peter Ward.
2 points. Finally. Finally. And yours, Russ. Who was the last Brighton player so far to score for England under-21s?
Right. just have to hazard a guess, I think. I'm not sure if he scored for them, but Solly March?
Solly March for 2 points.
Ah.
That came from no. Did you have that in your locker there, Jared?
I was going to say Peter Ward.
Just you thought it was a trick question.
Yeah, well, yeah. I know Zamora never scored.
No, he didn't. I think they're probably the only two Brighton players. I could be wrong, but yeah, no, Solly March scored a worldie against Denmark in a qualifier not that long ago.
Did Forster Kaski score as well? In the Toulouse
he certainly played a lot. There's a good chance he did, so that's a fair point. But no, it's Solly March much more recently, so... Okay, and at the end of the Brighton Hove Albion round, the scores are Jared Evans has 12 and Russell Guyver has 4. So thanks very much to Jared and Russ. They'll be back for the second half very soon. In the meantime, back to AD.
Well, that was interesting, and you can find out exactly who won in part 2 on next week's show, but that's all we've got time for on this week's show. So, of course, thank you to Alan Wares, thank you to Don Shanks, thank you to Russell Guyver, thank you to Jared Evans, and thanks, of course, to oldfootballshirts.com. I've been Ady Packer, and we'll see you again next week. See ya. How can you lie there and think of England when you don't even know who's in the team? Surely sexual politics has left me all of a muddle. Surely we're joined in the ideological cuddle. I'm celebrating my love for you with a pint of beer and a new tattoo. And if you haven't noticed yet, I'm more impressionable when my cemented well. I
politics and pregnancy are divided as we empty our glasses. How I love those evening classes. Surely you really know how to make a young man angry. Surely can we get through the night without mentioning family? People from your church agree it's not much of a career. Trying the handles of parked cars, whoops, there goes another year. Whoops, there goes another pint of beer. Trees, if I was your old man and you was my missus, give my greetings to Newfoundland.